Clustered Conversations. Clustered Conversations by Weka.
All right. Hi there. Welcome to Clustered Conversations. I'm Bob.
And I'm Josh.
And we've got Tyler Nelson here from Kyoxia with us. Is it Kyoxia? Kyoxia? How do you guys pronounce it?
Kyoxia. I usually say like an old Yakuza gangster. Kyoxia.
Kyoxia. But it's formerly Toshiba. So yes. It's just a new name on a very, very old and very known product that's worked well for a long time. So I'm trying to see, what have you done to get yourself here? Where'd you start off, Tyler? I mean, how did you get into storage? Why is storage something you gravitated towards?
I started off as a desktop support admin. I mean, I guess back in the day, originally I programmed BASIC when I was like 9 years old on a TI-99. Nice. So, nice. You know, first experience was 5.5-inch floppies. So I've been saving data for a long, long time. I moved from desktop support into Windows servers and virtualization. And once you get into virtualization, you get into SAN. So we started, I guess the first SAN I touched was an IBM Shark. And then...
Sorry.
Oh, ooh. Yeah. Ooh. Yeah, I know. Then from there, EVAs. The EVA 8000, 8100, 8400 started deploying large-scale VM clusters on there. And then eventually... into Kyoxia. I've been with Toshiba / Kyoxia for almost 8 years.
Wow.
Doing SSD, a little bit of R&D, a little bit of like software dev and optimization to make software work better with SSDs, reduce write amp, those kind of things. And then the last 2.5 years, I've been basically doing demos and white papers. So my team builds crazy things and tries to write papers about it. So all storage focused.
And that's how we met. That was a fun part of how we met. So I guess why the name change? I mean, when did the Kyoxia? I mean, I know you're not exactly at the C level making those decisions, but why did they change the name from Toshiba to Kyoxia?
It was licensing, frankly. Once we were spun off as a separate company and purchased by a consortium, Bain Capital and others, we had the Toshiba name license for a year. So we went by TMA for a year and we had to come up with a new name. So everyone submitted name thoughts and concepts, and we ended up picking Kyoxia, which is technically Greek and Japanese glued together. It's value and memory. And so we bring value to memory is our kind of theme. And they took two words and glued them together.
Nice. Well, I mean, we've had really good luck with your stuff because I know a lot of our partners put your drives into the servers that we run on top of. And I think we played with, was it CX6? What was the?
CD6, I believe.
CD6. And we were getting some fantastic per drive performance off those guys. So it was fun to see the TLCs. So I guess, what do you see as far as size and technology and, you know, chips designs? You know, there's been a lot of pressure on the supply chain out there, right? And drives have been one of the long leads on stuff. And so some people are starting to lean towards QLC over TLC. And we're just trying to, you know, what is your thoughts on the whole world of storage of these days? I mean, you're closer to testing this stuff than we are.
I think a lot of that depends on which, there's sort of two main verticals that we see, which would be your data center, your cloud type providers, and then on the other side, the enterprise grade stuff. So enterprise, we're seeing a lot of people still holding on to SAS, particularly server side. So server side, a 12 gig SAS setup is still very fast. We have 24 gig SAS now. I believe HP has the cards out, and our PM6 and PM7 lines are 24 gig SAS. Extremely fast. NVMe, enterprise NVMe, high grade, kind of almost into that performance level. They're excellent performance. And so server side, we see that some storage arrays are still hanging on to that SAS loop backend. So that market is not going away anytime soon. And especially on the value side, the smaller business, small enterprise, the SaaS lines are going to live for quite a while. Everywhere else, we're starting to see everyone wants a high performance. Anybody that wants high performance is moving to NVMe, and particularly direct attached NVMe. and the size, the capacity ranges are continue to creep up. Frankly, at this point, we used to see a lot of like 480 gig or 500 gig kind of range, 256. That is almost non-existent. And part of that's due to die size. So the die are getting so big that it doesn't make any sense to trim it down to, you can't get enough channels. If you stack, to stack enough die to get the channels to get the performance, you need a minimum capacity, right? So the smallest we ship right now is 960s.
That's actually something we noticed way back about 3 years ago when I started working here, is some of the 1 terabyte drives, they had decent read performance, but the write performance was really poor because it seemed like they had limited number of channels. And as soon as we got to the three terabyte drives is when we got to the actual performing drives. So it was I think that might explain why, not with yours, but with other people's, because you guys weren't exactly out there with the QXC drives yet.
Yes. And when I started, we had drives, but we were not a major player. Now we're one of the larger drive manufacturers.
Yeah, so it's a channels issue.
Yeah, 3.84 is kind of the sweet spot. 3.84, 768. And then we see a lot of people, especially in the mid-tier, higher capacity, higher performance at the 15 tier. We have very little demand for 30. We build 30s in our CM series and in our PM. So our PM6 and our CM6 both come, and CM7 both come in 30 tear.
Exactly, yeah.
We rebuild do time. Not see volume on that due to, I think people that are either afraid, I mean, I go back to my old VMware days. We used to not want to put a ton of VMs on host because you're like, oh, if one host goes down, what's my blast radius, right? The blast radius concept. Okay, one host went down and I lost 20 VMs. Now you have servers so big, you're like, oh, there's 140 VMs on this server. So it's an adjustment. You go from like having 6 VMs to having 40, and that's like, whoa, what's going to happen here? So I think a little bit of that is happening on the storage side, where people are afraid to jump to 30 tear just because you end up with massive density per host, and you have to build extra capacity, extra nodes to, you don't want to lose very large volumes of data. Actually, I think enterprises don't lose data ever. That's RGE, as we call it, a resume generating event.
So yeah, we've working with one customer who has a giant cluster. I mean, like they have hundreds of hosts in this cluster, and they're running almost exclusively 15 tera drives on each system. So they got 10, 15 terabyte drives over 160. It's a huge cluster. And we're seeing a lot more of my newer customers as they're buying the 15 terabyte drive. So people are getting more comfortable with it. Because when I first started, it was 3.84 was everything. And then last year we saw a couple of 768s. And this year we're seeing 15 almost exclusively. And we are leaning towards 30 because our protection scheme within WECA allows them to be safe when they go to that size. So
yeah, especially the performance of the drives now, such a point where even if you have 15 or 30 terabyte drive, the time to rebuild is really not as bad as certainly as it used to be back in the day when you were maybe you could get a gigabyte per second to a drive and on a rebuild, and 15 terabyte at 1 gigabyte a second, that's gonna take forever. But now we're doing 4, 5, 7, soon to be in the PCIe 5 space. How much, Tyler?
So PCIe 5.0 maxes out about 15.
There we go. So
we're seeing consistent. We have our CM. I have they send me all the dev samples, and they're like, okay, make demos, build dev stuff. So I have drives with no labels on them. Where my favorite is when it says working sample at the top, which is before we get to engineering and customer. Our initial is working sample. So those show up and it's like, all right, let's go have some fun and try to play with this. So we throw it in. I was able to get pretty consistent, like 14.2, 13.8 reads, gigabyte per second of read. So it's significant. And the Gen 5, to me, the Gen 5 really back end is going to make a bigger difference as far as the networking side.
Yeah, it sounds like.
The problem is,
if PCIe Gen 5 is going to be able to support drives that fast, and a single drive is already more throughput than 100 gig Ethernet or InfiniBand can handle, networking is going to need to catch up here, because even 400 gig, which is just kind of on coming into its own right now and starting to be adopted, what, PCIe 5 maybe next year, probably in the commercial space where you can actually like buy a server that has it?
Potentially. From what I hear with delays on, I believe Genoa is going to be out sooner. It'll be December-ish, mm-hmm. maybe. You know, everybody talks about when they're going to release. And the latest I've heard on the Intel side looks to be February or March from their public releases. They'll be shipping in volume by March, from what I understand. So that will bring PCIe 5.0 to the server, which makes a 400 gig card actually make sense. And the problem, again, is going to be back to front, because if you stack, the big trend I'm seeing is moving to 1U.
For years and years,
we've had dual socket 2U over and over. That's what everybody deployed. Ton of drive bays. And frankly, you can't get that out of the box. You do the math on a 100 gig card, it's 12.5 gigs a second, gigabytes, so gigabit to gigabyte. Okay, if a single drive can read and write, even at PCIe Gen 4 speed, at 7 gigabytes a second. Okay, so you can run two drives per 100 gig network card. You end up with a back-to-front bandwidth problem, right?
Yep, yep. And the number of PCIe lanes that are exposed to be able to actually plug in more and more network cards as you add more and more drives, right? To be able to actually extract the performance of those NVMEs.
Right. So a 2U with 24 drives, you're never going to be able to have enough lanes to plug enough network cards to make that make sense.
Yeah, at least from a performance standpoint, not from a density. If you just need, you know, all the petabytes in the world, it makes what makes sense and works. But if what you want to do is maximize the investment on those chips, in that flash, to be able to extract the performance that they're capable of, it's interesting, the kind of oversubscription you can very quickly move into.
Yes. The other dynamic I see is the processor. We've been a dual proc. There's always the quad CPU systems hanging out there, the oddball, and a few one proc. But right now, most of the servers shipped are dual proc. And with the core count increase that we're going to see, I believe Intel is going to ship 60. AMD's shipping, planning to do 96, from what I understand, from what they've announced. So 96 on a single chip. It starts to become an issue of, like, do I need that? So I can see it moving to a 1U single socket as kind of the baseline.
So we have a new update with our software, Fora, where we can do multi-backend containers. So let's say I have a system that has 20 drives. So now I can do one drive core per drive, so I can get a full 7 gigs a second to each drive. And then I can do N number 21 compute cores, which will give me millions of IOPS. And then I can do 8 front ends, and they're running in separate containers, so I can kill and change them on the fly. And so that's a whole new architecture we have going on right now. So we can actually take advantage of those 96 core systems pretty dang well now.
Yeah, we've been seeing some really, really significant performance from test systems running that multi-backend container where, you know, we've got, you know, what I think the last one we used was like 36 core processors and two of them, so, you know, fair number of potential cores to use. And I think we ended up using like 58 of them or something like that. And we were doing, it was an 8 or 9 million read IOPS from a 6-node cluster, like 6 servers. From a file system, you know, 9 million read IOP across the clients. It was pretty
Bob screaming. And I played with this quite a bit, and I think we deployed an early version of this because we were doing 313.3.
Yeah, we were doing an illegal version, yes.
Yes, and doing multi-core on before it was technically supported. And we did see the highest performance with a 3-container setup. We had 12 drives per node, so we assigned 4 per container.
Yep, we made a crazy-looking thing. Now, the new version, actually, you can do it without drive cores, which is 4.0 lets me do it and actually make it cooler. Mm-hmm.
I really want to play with 4.0. I don't have enough. I don't have 6 of the same system to build with, but I'm quoting it, if you will, now. So,
are they close enough?
I'm on my way towards building a new Weka deployment.
Yeah, Josh and I will hop in there and help you out in a second, because this is the fun stuff for us. We love creating the monsters.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. The skunk work stuff is the fun work.
Oh, yeah. I just picked up a new GPU box. So now I've got A100s in the lab to play with. Nice. So That's also one of my favorite things about Weka.
The RDMA stuff right now, I've gotten a little better on it with Mellanox switches. So, and I just did it with Cisco switch at a customer, but we're doing RDMA to SMB. So we got RDMA running to SMB for a customer doing 8 gigs a second from a Windows client.
On a single 100 gig. So that's not, you know, terminal performance. That's, they've got one line, but it's fast enough. And SMB, that's kind of the, that's the really interesting part of that 8 gig per second on our POSIX agent. Yeah, we'll do that all day long. SMB.
Yeah,
so I've seen SMB over RDMA becoming a thing, but I've never seen anyone deploy it. So that's that is quite interesting.
Yeah, I got it deployed in production right now, so it's kind of nice to see. And we're also playing with multi-channel and a few other things, but it's different. It's not our agent, so we can't get the IOPS the same way, simply because SMB and NFS both can't push IOPS the same way. But throughput-wise, if you have a throughput need, it's fantastic to see, you know, take advantage of those NVMEs fully.
Absolutely. Nice large block read.
Yep. Fun to see.
My favorite feature for with you guys is actually your GPU direct support. Modern workloads are using more and more GPUs, and you look at it and it's like, okay, I can do NFS for the GPU direct, or I can do, like, there's not a lot of options. And I start playing with the Weka stuff. It's like, okay, I can do GPU workloads directly at line speed. Like, if you're going to pay for GPUs, you got to feed them, right? You want the throughput. What's the point of buying very, very expensive GPUs if you can't keep enough bandwidth into them to actually make the workloads work? So having the Weka FS integrated with GPU Direct, it pretend like the box thinks it's got a local file system. It tries to write direct, pops it right out through the Weka container, right through the agent, right out to the cluster, and performance is incredible.
Pops your uncle. There we go.
Exactly. I think we hit 139 gigabytes a second off a 6-node cluster.
Yep. And we were playing with it was 200 gigs, but we were playing with, we had multiple, we could have done a little bit better, but we were running this on a system that had two AMD chips, processors. Josh actually is the one who made, Josh is the one who figured out how to set up the actual configuration for that. So there's a way to do it now. We have a better understanding of it. So you did that in OCI, where you got it up, you got it to full performance across the dual chip by making it look like two separate servers.
Exactly. Yeah. And then it's using three containers. So one container dedicated to each of the sockets and only using the network cards, memory, and CPUs in those sockets. And then another container that hosts the front end cores. And those front end cores span both sockets. Yep. And what's interesting about this is that it's not just the server that we're doing that. This was actually a converged workload. So that's why there's that one.
His server was interesting because I think we need, if we're gonna get another one, we got to look at it, because what happened is his had the drives in NUMA 0, 1, and 2, and then had the network cards in NUMA 3.
Ooh.
Yeah, so it made it really interesting. So if we can't, we want to have a balance.
Wonder if that's just where the NICs were physically placed.
It had to do with traces. It's CPU, it's motherboard traces. Yeah. The way they had it designed, we had 8 drives off of controller or off of CPU 1, and we had the other 4 drives off of CPU 2, and then all the PCIe lane backend was off of CPU 1. CPU 2, I guess. So we even with dual 100 gig cards, we were unable to, everything had to cross over the Infinity Fabric, and that's where it.
Yep, that's where it kills you. When you get the new one, we have a couple of different architectures you look at where they have the two cores, the two CPUs, and everything's balanced. You have one card on one card on the other, and the drives are at half and half, and that's the sweet spot, right? It's a nice balanced workload.
Yeah, not having to cross two or Infinity Fabrics core. And a Northbridge. Or
single core, yeah. Single socket, woohoo! We're all
job
over
done.
That.
Job's done. But it's that extra hop and that latency that is incurred. That just kind of slows things down just a little bit.
And that assumes the motherboard is designed in such a way that you can place the cards and the drives off of the different sockets. So the motherboard has to be designed properly to make your dual socket, dual container, or multi-container work.
So, we have a couple at Super Micro that work that way. And then we have, there was an R640 that was made for us. That was a Keystone, I believe it was called. That was specifically that way. They had one card, six drives, one card, six drives, or one card, five drives, one card, five drives. It was great.
Balanced configs just seems like, I mean, if you're designing the motherboard and you've got, you know, X number of PCIe lanes coming from each socket and coming from North Bridges, et cetera, it seems like it would just behoove you to try and make things as even and fair and balanced as possible. So you never come into a situation where, well, I'm using four of my five expansion slots and literally all of them go to a single socket to be served by one. But then all of my drives are now serviced by a different CPU. Like, why would you want to force your workload to cross sockets quite so much instead of having everything just funnel into directly where it's being computed and serviced by? Seems like it makes sense. I don't know. Perhaps I've never designed a motherboard, so perhaps that's a significant challenge that I am assuming is easy to do because it has to be
weird.
Come on.
Weird first tech job. I actually did QA on circuit boards. That was a fun one. When I was tracing, I had to trace the lines and find where a transistor or resistor on backwards, which would cause everything to fail. That was fun. Also taught me that I never wanted to be an engineer. Because that was a horrible job. I like OSs much better. So, all right.
OCD is not that strong, Bob.
No. Okay. It was also midnight to 8 a.m., which was also a horrible part of it.
Oh.
That's a whole different problem.
How are you supposed to be that like focused and like capable of doing, you know, kind of very detail level work at O Dark 30?
Mountain Dew and coffee.
Fair enough. Not Mountain Dew, not Jolt?
No, I was not a Jolt fan, but yeah.
Interesting. All right. Interesting.
So the Tyler, you and I met basically working on a weird little project of building a cluster to hand over to some other guys to play with. And so you want to talk about that? Because that relationship came from you guys.
Yes, we have done some different projects originally with Linus Tech Tips and other, we're trying to target brand recognition, so... Linus is good for that. Those guys are really good. They get a lot of eyeballs. And so they have done petabyte projects before where it was hard drives. And we were like, hey, can we do something crazy? And they're like, sure, let's do an all PCIe 4.0. And so we pitched like, hey, let's do 1 PB of PCIe Gen 4 and used our 15 terabyte CD6 drives, which are our kind of data center value drive, not our highest performance, but they're actually the read speed is incredible on them. So I really like those drives. And so we were like, all right, so what do we do? We're trying to figure out software, trying to figure out, you know, okay, who can we get hardware from? So we talked to Supermicro, talked to AMD, and they said, okay, hey, we can supply some hardware. And we wanted something fun as a workload. So we wanted a cool front end. And so we reached out to our partners at NVIDIA and said, hey guys, you know, what do you think? And they're like, oh, we can do that, but you need some GPUs. You need, you know, what can we use to drive this big of a cluster? And we couldn't really get like 10 GPU boxes. So they were like, how about a DGX? And so we talked to Supermicro and they're like, we have a version of the DGX that is, they refer to it as an HGX, but it's functionally 8 A100 GPUs stuffed into one box. It has 10 network card slots. So it's 10 by 16 slots. The two on the front are usually used for storage and the 8 on the back are generally used for GPU to GPU for clustering these boxes. We only had one, so we're like, okay, we're going to cheat. And so we stuffed the back end full of 200 gig network cards and connected it straight to the storage. So the GPUs are right, like directly connected through the NVIDIA fabric. Yeah, that's the back end NVIDIA fabric. Directly connected.
We were doing Ethernet too, weren't we?
We were. I know a lot of deployments are InfiniBand. And I have, you know, a few axioms on, you know, never bet against Ethernet. I know it's like we've had all these other things that have tried to challenge Ethernet, and it's like just never bet against Ethernet.
It's just so moddable. So like you can build so much on top of Ethernet. Like it's come a long way from the fast Ethernet days of half duplex 10 megabit.
God, yeah.
Yes.
A long
way.
The part that takes a lot though is being able to get enough channels filled to get that performance, right? Because if you only have like a single stream, you're still locked down to a single problem. So that's why it's fun to work with these cool, you know, applications like we're looking at that allows us to run multi-stream and be able to pull that data across that network at full steam. Sure.
Oh yeah, so the way it's set up, and each video card is able to functionally act as its own processor for that workload, and each one it's kind of in pairs, so it's two cards and two GPUs, and the way the box is designed. And so every NIC had a separate IP, and the GPUs would directly reach out through the network. And so they're pulling in data, and it's an insane box because there's 640 gigabytes of video of GPU based RAM. There's 2 terabytes in the box, but the GPUs, it's 80 gigs per GPU at 8 GPUs, 640 gigabytes of video RAM. And so it could pull in as much. I mean, it was pulling as much as it could, and we were cranking through frame rendering.
We were doing like 90 some odd gigabytes a second, weren't we?
It was 90 gigabytes a second rendered, meaning yeah. It came in and was rendered in a second at 90.
Oh, that's not just the GDSIO. I'm running just like some FIO style IO. Oh, that was actually doing work.
That was close to 140 on that. But when you're talking about actually rendering the each frame of this, we did a three-dimensional NASA demo that they essentially used a supercomputer to build a demo of landing humans on Mars and what it will take, the retro rockets, everything that it will take with all of those data points. And then they used, because even NASA scientists cannot look at a giant pile of data and be like, oh, this is what it needs to look like. They wanted to render it into a video. And so, but it's not really a video. It's a three-dimensional model that simulates live what the actual landing is going to look like. So you can rotate around three dimension. You can zoom in into details of like rocks on Mars and the landscape of Mars. You can zoom into the different parts of the lander. It's a full 3D model that's as a video. So it steps through that. So it has to render all of that, all of those data points. And each frame is 13.8 gigabytes each. So each frame render. So we were rendering it 6 frames a second. And you go 6 frames a second, that's, you know, insane. But it's 2 Blu-rays a frame. So you're right. So you're rendering 12 Blu-rays a second. That's a pretty impressive render workload.
Sounds like a lot of pixels, a lot of ray tracing, a lot of. Oof. Wow.
Cool. So,
that's wild.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was fun to watch. I mean, I think that just seeing the flames render was always fun to watch. It looked like a little umbrella of flames coming off the bottom of that thing. I really love playing with the GP Direct stuff. I've been doing it for a while, and it's nice to see actually a use for it and where we can see it properly.
Yeah, it's good to see the maturity of that protocol coming in and actually being used and sort of realizing the capabilities of the GPUs, not just to do sort of computationally expensive workloads where you're, you know, offloading from what normally a CPU would do, instead of having this, you know, massively parallelized GPU capable of doing, you know, much, much faster work at, you know, single floating point or half floating point kind of accuracy. But like actually doing like really useful and like data intensive work. It's really, really, we're living in the future at this point.
I think that's going to be the direction of many applications. I think we're going to see more and more offload, and it's going to cease to be offload. It's going to be the CPU does data management and or process management, and you bring your workloads off and on, but it wouldn't surprise me to see more and more workloads move entirely to GPU. And the more we can get the CPU out of the way, because the CPUs are great. They can do everything, but most of the workloads we do are very, very specific, and we're seeing servers more and more specific for use cases. There's even, I know some of the hyperscale have custom design. They post on there, about custom design hardware for different things. So the servers are getting more specialized for certain use cases. And the more we can just kind of make that like CUDA or TensorFlow or whatever, and use those GPUs to actually run the workload versus CPU, we can get more efficiency. And getting more out of each server, even if it's a slightly more expensive server, if I can get three times the work out of it, okay, that starts to make sense. And having GPUs able to access the storage directly is great, but then you run into, I can only fit so many drives per server. Now I've got to get it from somewhere. So that's why I really like the Weka solution for GPU Direct.
Cool. I don't know, Josh, you got anything else you want to chat with Tyler about? I mean, we've had a geek fest for a little while here.
No, I was just going to start talking about how it seems like GPUs are now finally like the actual proper like successor to the math coprocessor.
Yep. Cool. Yeah, I mean, it's fun to see that GPUs really are taking over the world. We see them all the time, and it's we need partners like you to be able to build clusters that give us the ability to feed those GPUs at full speed, right?
Exactly.
It's fun to do, man. I mean, I love seeing 160 gigabytes a second. I love seeing, renders happen almost at real time. And it's like the fruition of that old days when I used to build stuff on my Apple IIe, and I would watch those little lines go across the screen to create a high res file, a high res image, and now seeing it like in seconds rendering, a rocket blasting through space with fire coming out of the cone, all in seconds.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, wait for Gen 5. Like once we get Gen 5, we can get some 400 gig. I'm gonna go evil in the lab. I've already got a plan, and one of the projects I want to do is Gen 5 Weka.
Yeah.
So we have our new CM7 drives. They're just blazingly fast, 14.2 gigabytes a second of read. I mean, it's nuts per drive. So I'll be acquiring the correct equipment once the server side CPUs are ready, getting the right 400, maybe 800 gig networking, whatever we need to make it work. And then I'll come back to you guys and be like, all right, let's build something crazy.
So I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be fun. I want to see some really big numbers. Like, that 2 terabyte number up in OCI that's a big number. I want to see bigger numbers. Let's go make bigger numbers.
I'm excited.
I'll see what I can do.
All right, cool. Well, Tyler, thank you very much for your time, man. I appreciate it, and in your partnership, and look forward to building the next server with you. That'll be a lot of fun.
Oh, so. Yeah. Let's have some fun. Thanks for the invite, and it's been a pleasure being here. Thanks, guys.
Cool. Thank you. And so for Cluster Conversations, I'm Bob.
And I'm Josh. Thanks we'll talk to you guys next time.
Bye.